Okay, today's Gemara is Daf Hey, Bava Metzia Daf, Kaf Hey. We're going to start at the bottom of Kaf Dal and Amabet at the new Mishnah. Ve'elu chayav lachriz. So, right, we started the first Mishnah. Elu Metzia Chalo, ve'elu chayav lachriz. That was the title. And then it went into which Metzia you could take. And now we're going to get into which ones you have to announce. Okay, and then we talked about that maybe there's some middle ground in between the two, which we'll get into today. Matzah peropikli. You find them in some vessel, oh kli kemochehu, or even just a vessel, usually has some sort of siman on it. Ma'ot b'ki, so if you find either the vessel by itself, or you find fruits in the vessel, why do you need to say both, right? It should be obvious. So there's some discussion about that. I'm trying to remember what the... actually thought of it, and then I saw someone said it, but now I'm trying to remember. If you find peirot in the kli... right, maybe you think you just need to return the kli and not the fruits, I think. So the chiddush is you definitely also need to return whatever's in the kli. Maybe that was the chiddush, I can't remember. Ma'ot b'kis, okay, again, you find money in a wallet or a pouch, or okis kimochehu, or just the kis itself. Tziburei peirot, if you have a group of fruits together, or tziburei ma'ot, a group of money together, we're going to see... what exactly, the Rashi says there, we're going to see in the Gemara what the siman is. Is it minyan, how much money it was? Or is it makom, where you found it? Shlosha matbeot ze al gav ze. Okay, soon we're going to see what exactly the siman is in this three matbeot, hence the show and tell. Krichot b'rishut ha'yachid. Right, this we saw, if there's bundles in the rishut ha'yachid, right, that was... we're assuming it has a siman, but and it can't be trampled. That was one explanation. We had all different explanations about it. Viki karot shabalabayit. This is homemade bread, because the assumption is it has a siman. It's identifiable, distinct from bakery bread. Vigizet semer, or really, right, that each person is unique and distinguishable from each other. Vigizet semer halakuchim mi beit ha'uman. Okay, if you get fleece of wool, okay, from the Uman, okay, the guy who makes it. The assumption is also it's identifiable. Kadei yayin v'kadei shemen, bottles of wine or bottles of shemen, hare elu chayav lachriz. So all these things have simanim, and therefore you have to announce that, you have to make an announcement. We'll get to later what, okay, we won't get to it today, but what the announcement is, what you have to announce, and when you have to announce it and all that. I actually think that's going to fall out on Simchat Torah. So you guys will be on your own with that, but interesting questions. Okay, Gemara. Ta'ama dematzah peirot b'kli uma'ot b'kis. The assumption is here that why do you have to return the peirot? Because you found them in the kli, or you found the ma'ot in the kis. Right? Now, here comes detective work. Let's say you find the kli ulefanav peirot. There's a kli right here, and in front of it are some fruits. So the fruits are not in the kli. But the kli is clearly mine. So now, can I claim that the peirot are also mine? So the assumption from our Mishnah is only if the peirot were in the kli. But if the peirot were next to the kli, it's not clear that they came from the kli. And therefore, you don't have to be machriz. So same thing with kisu lefanav ma'ot, right? The pouch, and in front of it, there's ma'ot. Hare elu shelo. So now they're going to say, not only does it implied... is that implied from the Mishnah? But also there's a braita that says so. Then after we're going to raise a problem with this. Tanina laha detana rabbanan. Okay, so this concept that we just derived from the Mishnah, we now see in a braita. Matzah kli ulefanav peirot. Here it says it explicitly in the braita. Kis ulefanav ma'ot. Right, so again, the ma'ot or the peirot weren't in the kli or the kis. Hare elu shelo, you can keep them. You can keep the peirot. Miktzatan b'kli u'miktzatan agabe karka. What if some fruits were in the kli and some were on the ground? Or miktzatan b'kis u'miktzatan agabe karka. Same case with the money. Chayav lachriz. Then you have to be machriz on all of them because the assumption is that whatever was out of the kli had originally come from the kli. Now, what's the problem with this braita? Uriminhu. This seems to contradict another source. Matzah davar she'en bo siman. B'tzad davar sheyesh bo siman, chayav lachriz. If you find something that doesn't have a siman, like these fruits that are outside the basket, Bitzad davar, next to something, sheyesh bo siman. So chayav lachriz. One second. Ba baal siman v'natal et shelo. If the baal siman comes, right, so I'm sorry, this is talking about, one second. What this means is, I misread this one. What this means is, if matzah davar she'ein bo siman, next to davar she'yesh bo siman, what case is this like? This isn't like the mitzatan. This is like the peirot are outside the kli. So you find something that doesn't have a siman, which is the peirot, and you find them next to this davar she'yesh bo siman, which is the kli, chayav lachriz, which seems to imply you're chayav lachriz on everything. Okay? And our Mishnah, the assumption we came, right, the conclusion we came to from our Mishnah and the Braita says, no, right, if the peirot, kli ulefanav peirot, or kis ulefanav ma'ot, you can keep the peirot, okay, or keep the ma'ot. So now this seems to contradict, okay? The continuation of this Braita is, ba'bal siman v'natal et shelo, but on the one hand, you have to be machriz, but if the bal siman came and just took his kli, and he didn't take the fruits, claiming that really just the kli is mine, so then zachah ala b'davar she'en bo siman. So then the finder gets to keep the other part, okay? But you have to announce it. If once you announce it, he only takes the kli and leaves you the fruit, well, then you can keep it. So now we have to deal with the first line, which is, again, we have the assumption from our Mishnah and the first Braita, the Mishnah seems to imply, and the Braita says explicitly, you don't have to be machriz on the peirot, you could keep them. And the braita, the second braita that says, you have to be machriz on everything. So Amar Rav Zvid, lo kasher, we're going to have a bunch of different explanations to this. Okay, so the first explanation is Rav Zvid's. He said, lo kasher, habakuba bakitna, habatsanu peri. Okay, big debate about let's explain the words, and then I'll see if I can remember both explanations. So one, yeah, I do remember both. Okay, one is, the first one is, it's with flax and the basket that they would put flax into. And the second is, it's on senet with fruit, like a fruit basket. Okay, so one is talking about flax next to its own, you know, whatever you would put flax into. And the other is fruit next to a basket. What's the difference? So, according to one explanation, we say that the flax, we can assume, came from the... Now, you have to remember, what's the case? It's where everything's out of the kli. It's not like the partial case, right? If it's partially, then you assume it all came from the kli. But when it's all out, you assume... So now the question is, what do you assume? According to one source, you assume it came from the kli. According to the other source, you assume it didn't come from the kli, right? If it's flax, what's the issue with flax? It's all intertwined. So you can assume that if some of it's out of the kli, well, then it's all going to fall out of the kli. You're not going to have partial, okay? And therefore, if you see flax next to your container that the flax could have been in, then we're going to assume the flax went with the container. And the reason all of it fell out and not just some of it is because flax is all intertwined, okay? Versus fruits, where fruits fell out of the kli, the assumption is only if you have some still left, that some fruits might fall out, but not all of them. Okay, that's one way of reading it. The other way is Rashi, which is the opposite reading, which is the flax. What happens with flax? You'll end up with remnants of the flax inside the kli. So if there's no remnants, then clearly it didn't come from there. Whereas fruits don't leave remnants. Okay, maybe sometimes they do, right? They leave their juice. But let's assume they were in good shape, the fruits. They weren't rotting at all. They don't leave any siman. So therefore, if the fruits are outside, and all of them are outside, and there's no siman inside, that doesn't indicate anything, and it's very likely, again, do your detective work. Oh, there's fruits right here, this basket right there. Very likely the fruits came from the basket. But if it's flax, and there's nothing at all inside, well, the flax would have left some of its stuff inside.
Even okay, more so coins, I would think. If you have a wallet and the coins nearby, it's very
likely that the money came from the wallet.
Right.
Yeah, you could say the same thing for the fruit basket. I mean, all of it, you know, it's right. So anyway, that's what Rav Zvid says. Now, obviously, what's the problem with Rav Zvid? It only relates to the fruit case, not the money case at all. Okay? So, tough. Next answer. Rav Papa Amar, hava habitzana b'peri. No, you can actually explain them both being about fruits and basket. Velo kasha. Had ishtar b'midi. Hadilo ashtar b'midi. Okay? One case is where there was a little bit left. It didn't say so, but that's what it meant. When the Braita says you have to be machriz, it meant when there's a little bit still left in there. And the other one is where there was nothing left. Ibait ema, another option. Havaha delo ishtar b'midi. Okay? Neither one is talking about where there was anything left inside. V'lo kashya, hadema hadre ape legabe pere. It depends, okay, continue with our detective work, how it was found. Was the opening of the basket next to the payro, like facing it, or was it facing the other direction, in which case it doesn't seem likely that the fruits came out of this basket, okay? Maybe the assumption is that the basket had an opening on the side or something, right? Because in other words, if you think of a fruit bowl, and the fruit bowl, let's say this is a fruit bowl, and the opening is straight up, then obviously the payroll aren't going to be, you know, you have to assume there was some opening on the side.
I was picturing it knocked over the whole time.
Ah, right. So it could be it was knocked over. Then clearly the opening is going to be depending on where it is. Or it could be there was an opening on the side of it, like it was one of those, you know, fluted, I don't know, what you call a fluted bowl? Where it's open a little bit on one side, and maybe that open, you know, that's the side where you found the fruits. And if you find it on the other side, then obviously we're going to assume it didn't come from there. Okay, I think there's one more. Ibait ema, from right, I think there's just one more. Hava had mahadre ape legabe pere. Both these cases we're talking about, otherwise there would be nothing to even discuss. Obviously the opening is toward the fruit. But lokasha hadi le ognin litsana, where there's a rim on the basket. If there's a rim, then we assume that not all the fruits would have fallen out. And therefore, only if there's fruit still in the basket are we going to assume it came from there. But if everything's outside the basket and there was a rim on the basket, then the assumption is that those fruits didn't come from here. Because otherwise, not all of them would have fallen out. Whereas if there's no rim, that's why also what Ruth is saying, it was on its side, it makes a lot more sense. It's on its side, but there's a rim. So obviously not everything's going to roll out of the basket. If there's a rim, it's going to prevent it from falling out. And if it doesn't have this rim, then we see, and all the fruits are outside the basket, we can still assume that the fruits came from the basket, right? Because we already said the opening was facing the fruits, and therefore we can assume everything just fell out. And that therefore, if we see them all outside, we could still say, that was the second braita, that they came from this basket, and you have to be machriz. Okay. Next section. Tziburei peirot v'tziburei me'ot. Okay, ma'ot. A group of fruits and a group of money. Shmat mina. So we can infer from this Mishnah what? Minyan habi siman. Remember we had a whole debate. Is minyan siman? Is makom siman? So now we can say, here's perfect proof. Minyan is siman. Because it says, how else are you going to say it was a group of fruits, right? The guy's going to have to obviously say, I had 10 oranges that got lost. And the guy's going to say, I found 10 oranges. Here you go. Okay, I lost 100 shekels worth in coins, you know, and you get your money back. So now they say, no, you could say, Tnei Tzibor Peirot. No, it was a group of fruits together, but it's not necessarily, it's the grouping that's the identifying feature and not how many there were. Right, think about it also. How many times do you actually remember? You bought a bunch of oranges. You don't necessarily remember how many individual oranges you bought, but you knew you had a whole group of oranges together. Shmat mina, so then what's going to be the inference? If you say that it's Tzibur Peirot and not Tziburei Peirot, by the way, we've seen this a lot where they amend the text of the bright of the Mishnah. So then, Shmat mina, so then what's going to be the siman according to this? Makom habi siman, you're going to say, I lost a group of oranges on the side of the, you know, of the street in that spot, you know, on the corner of Akiva and Sifman. Then makom is going to be your siman. So then they're going to say, well, there you have it. This proves makom havi siman. Remember, we saw that was a machloket between Rabba and Rava. So then they say, no, tnei tziburei peirot. No. In other words, you could read it as tziburei, you could read it as tzibur, which means that this mishnah doesn't indicate whether it's makom or whether it's minyan, and you can't use this mishnah to prove either which way. In other words, it's either one or the other, but we don't know which one. Okay. Shloshan matbeot ze al gav ze. Ama Rabbi Yitzchak Migdala. Okay, well, why is he called Rabbi Yitzchak Migdala? Okay, it's a strange name, right? Because what is his shita? V'husha asuyin kimigdalim. Okay, what does he say? Three matbeo zel gavze. What's the case of three matbeo zel gavze? It's where the coins were built like a migdal. Okay, what's the assumption of a migdal? A migdal is wider at the bottom and it gets narrower toward the top. It's a tower. Okay, again, you could have a tower that's all straight up, but we're going to see later the Gemara says that what does it mean? It's you have the widest coin at the bottom, then it gets a little narrower, and it builds this kind of tower. Okay? So you can see he was called Rabbi Yitzchak Migdala because he was famous for the Shita about the Migdal. That's why they called him that. Okay, that's not a bad name. It's the guy who is called Rav Zuhama, who's the, you know, Zuhama is like, how do you translate it? It's like sweat and like unpleasant, you know, like contaminated. So yes, I forget what it was about, but there's this guy called Rav Zuhama because he said something about Zuhama. I don't remember the context. But sometimes you see it where the rabbis get named based on their shita about something. So Rav Yitzchak Migdala, it's not just a coincidence that his name is Migdala, okay?
Even it, and does that mean that they're agreeing with him or that that shita holds?
I think, well, first of all, we do see this is the shita. People,
that's the question.
Right. People do go by this. I don't know, just because they named him that. I think he was famous for the guy. That's the guy you said about the Migdal. So they called him Rav Yitzchak Migdala. Okay. Tanya Namihachi, here's another brayta. So in other words, Shalosh Matbeot Gze Al Gav Ze means in the Tzura of a Migdal, like this, okay? Tanya Namihachi, here's a bright to support. Matzah ma'o mefuzarot hare elu shelo. Asuyin ke migdalin, chayav lachriz. Here we have it, where a bright to says explicitly what Rabbi Yitzchak said, which is, if they're spread out and scatter, then you get to keep them. If they're banoi ke migdal, then you have to be machriz. Ve'elu hen asuyin ke migdalin. Okay, so now it says, and what's a soy ki migdal? Three coins, one on top of the other. So now the Gemara says, wait a minute. That braita itself is problematic. Why? Because there's something in between ma'ot mefuzarot, right? Scattered coins, and asuyin ki migdal, right? You can see that there's a lot of things in between there. So the Gemara is going to ask, Kagufa kasha, matzamu ma'ot mefuzarot hare elu shelo. Ha mishlach fe mish hard sense right mishlach fe shalchufe chayav lahachriz. If they're somewhat on top of each other, but not exactly banoi kimigdal, okay, some sort of arrangement of being one on top of the other, so then, you know, it sounds like chayav lahachriz. But from the seifa, ema seifa, asuyin kimigdalim chayav lahachriz. Ha mishlach fe shalchufe hare elu shelo. Right, you understand from the first line where it says if they're mefuzarot, you don't have to return them. But it sounds like if they're one on top of the other, you would. But from the second part, it says, well, one on top of the other only if it's like a migdal, but not if it's just randomly one on top of the other. So how do we resolve this? Tana, we have a source that says kol she'ein asuyin kemigdalim mefuzarot kari lahu. What does mefuzar mean? Mefuzar means any kind of formation that's not like a migdal. Okay, so therefore we answer our question and we say, if one's on top of the other and the other's on top of the other in some other formation that's not like a migdal, then we assume that that just kind of happened randomly and it wasn't. What's the whole assumption here? If the person built a migdal like this, it was on purpose that they built it like that and they plan to keep it like that and, you know, they plan to come back for it. It was there and that's their siman. But if it was somehow on top of, you know, one's leaning on the other and, you know, one's like partially on top of another coin and partially on the ground, that's not considered something that someone particularly left there on purpose.
Did they talk about the significance of the number three? I missed that.
So we're going to get to that.
Okay.
Not to worry. We didn't get to it. Amar Rabbi Chanina, Lo Shanu Ela Shel Shlosha Malachim. When they said this was only referring to, okay, here I ended up semi-good. I took some coins on the way out of the house. So here we have a euro and a 5-shekel coin and a 1-shekel coin. Okay, so maybe the 5 and the 1 are all of the same king, you would say. But he says it would have to be 3 different coins of 3 different kings. Okay, they had different insignias on them. Maybe the 5 and the 1 would count also because they have different symbols on them, right? Coins with different symbols entirely. Okay, aval shamelech echad, but if they were all of one king, even if you built this migdal, all of one king, eino chayav lachriz. So now they're going to say, wait a minute. Hechidami, okay, I see from your face, right? What are we talking about here? Ida asuyin ke migdalim, if it's done like a migdal, one is wider, right? And as it gets to the top, it gets narrower. Afilu shamelech echadami, right? One king should work. It shouldn't matter if there are different currencies or different kings or whatever you might say. It's different sized coins. And if they're not like a migdal, and they're just in some random formation on the ground, you know, even if they're somewhat in formation, but not like a migdal, right? Even if they're three different kings, you wouldn't say, oh, well, now it's clear, it's obvious, it's one person's. So, Ela, Itmar, Hachi Itmar. What did it mean when he said about the three kings versus the one king? Lo shanu ela shamelech echad ke'ein shlosha melechim. Okay, what does he mean? It's melech echad that's like three melechim. Vehechidami, da'asuyin kimigdalim. It's, what does this mean? It means that they're done like a migdal. Revicha tata, umetzia ilava, vizuta ilave. Okay, what are we saying? That it's as if, it's exactly how we described before. It's, even if it's one melech, but it's like three melechim. That's what he said. Lo shanu ela shlosha melechim. He means, even if it's one type of currency or one type of king on the, you know, insignia on all the coins, as long as one is wider, one is less wide, right? And they get narrower as they go up, and it's like a migdal, that's when it will work. That's when you can, that's when you have to return it. Damrinan, anuche anchinu. Right? And because you say that the guy must have put it there to leave, and he was coming back for it.
But he said,
Aval, just one sec. Aval shamelech echad tikulu ki adadi ninu. But what does it mean, melech echad? That all of them are the same size. What they're basically saying is, melech doesn't mean what's on the coin. It means size of the coin. Okay? If they're three different sizes, then, and they're placed on top of each other, like a migdal, then we assume the person left it there and he's coming back for it. But if it was three of the same shape coins, okay, so here, that's why I made sure to bring five, right? I brought three different sizes and three of the same size. If there were three of the same size coin, one on top of the other, that's not a formation that we say, oh, that's so unique, someone must have left it like that. Often you have a pile of coins that are the same size, they're left one on top of the other. Okay, right. You can make an argument. It's a little arbitrary.
Like the stock, like...
Well, even somebody who owns money, has money, and counts it, would often count it by stacking like
that. You would think that someone might count their money like that. Yes, it's definitely true. You can argue with this. So then, even though one is on top of the other, he can take them. Imar, you could say, itramuye itrame ubahade hadade nafal. In other words, what can you say? It just happened to fall like this. Right? And they just fell one on top of the other.
That's not convincing.
Right. Again, what could be convincing? That maybe you keep your money, different coins, in separate bags, and then it just fell out of your bag, those three coins, and they happen to fall right into one on top of the other. It is kind of weird that you're... Coins, but you have to remember, they didn't have hard floors then. They had, you know, softer floors, so maybe it wouldn't bounce as much. Right? On our floors, they would bounce, and it would go all over the place. Right? How many times do you lose money, and you can't even see where the coin fall. On ground, it might fall a little bit more, might not bounce as much. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan amar, afilu shamelech echad nami machris. Okay, Rabbi Yochanan, here comes your shita, right? Even if they're the same size, you would still be machris. My machris, so what do you announce? So, right, what are you going to say? So they answer, minyan, you say how many? So if that's the case, my iriat lata. Here we get to your question, Deb, about the numbers. What's the difference? Three. Afilu tre nami, right? It could be two. It could be three, right? Any sort of formation. Amaravina tiva machris. Now, you have to announce, and this goes back to, we saw this with the numbers a few days ago. You have to announce, I found a matbea. I found matbeot, you would say. Now, matbeot is two. So if the person says, oh, I lost two, well, then they're getting exactly what you said, and that's not good. In other words, you have to, as the person who lost something, you have to give some identifiable information. And if he says, I found coins, well, coins means two. So therefore, you by saying two, that's not an indicator that you really gave a sima. But if he says, I found coins, and you say, oh, well, I lost three, then you can get it back, because already then you're giving something unique other than what the guy specifically said. Okay, again, it's not 100% convincing. No, obviously three or more. Three or more. Two that's the issue. Because if the guy says coins, coins means two. This is always this concept. As soon as you put something in plural, you mean two. You're diverging from it if you say anything different than two. So that's the issue here. We have to have you announce something, and you can't say, we saw this the other day, you can't say, I found a coin, because that's not accurate. You didn't find a coin. You found coins. Yeah. So you say, I found coins. Somebody comes forward and says, oh, I lost coins. How many? Well, if you say two, it's basically the same thing that I said, and you're not giving anything unique that's going to basically...
How about you say coin or coins?
You
just
could
money.
Say
How about
coin
just
or
money?
Right.
Something. I found
so,
something.
Well, that's the problem with the Hebrew language. Yeah. In other words, what's the word for a coin? It's a matbea. Matbea is either matbea or matbeot. Yeah. There is no... But kesef, that's not... They didn't call it kesef. We call it kesef, but they didn't call it kesef. Then. They called it matbea. Kesef is silver. Exactly.
Yeah, if you really did lose two, you'd come to identifying marker.
Yes. Right, exactly.
But isn't the stack of coins an identifying marker? Whether it be how many? Can't you just say...
Right, so what they're saying is you have to say, I lost a stack of three coins.
And
it's not enough to say.
Like valuable...
Because you have to remember, if it wasn't a stack, the guy wouldn't have to announce it. So the stack is not identifiable. The stack, you have to understand, there's different issues here. The stack is what allows or what causes the finder to have to announce it.
Yes.
Once he has to announce it, the question is, what does he announce and what does the guy have to bring as a siman? So then he announces, generally, coins, and then the guy has to come forward and say, oh, I lost that amount of coins. But the formation isn't really the identifying thing because that's just the thing that causes the finder to say, oh, I have to announce this. There's a lot of issues here. It's... So then you wouldn't have to announce it.
You wouldn't even have to announce it.
Exactly.
So
he could keep it.
He becomes new too, because everyone who knows this...
Ah,
yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah. Okay, that's a good question I didn't think of. Okay. So what Don is saying is basically that if that's the case, then once you announce coins,
by definition
it's going to be at least three. But then you at least don't know. That's the thing. Coins means two. So once you're not giving a number... So then it could be three, it could be four, it could be five, it could be six, it could be seven. In other words, then already it could be anything. But two
doesn't...
So what
happens if someone lost four coins?
You could also, by the way, even though the Gemara doesn't say this, I think that a possible other motivation about the two is that two is... The fact that one fell on top of the other is also not such a unique... It's very likely that one could have fallen on top of the other. The Gemara doesn't say that, but I don't think that that means that that's not what the Tanaim were thinking, just because the Gemara didn't say it.
That's the other thing that's...
The value of the coin, like which coin you lost, or...
Yeah, like, there's a difference between if you lose a shekel coin...
Or a 10-shekel coin, or a...
Right. So that's the other thing that I'm finding troubling.
I don't think it's the value. I think it's whether...
Identify
it. Right, you can identify it, and whether you left it there, the idea is, did you leave it there, or you're planning to come back for it, or did...
Why would you have left it like that
in the middle of the street also?
And what happens if you leave four coins and someone finds only three of the four coins? And you say, come back and you say,
I left four coins, right.
So I only found three, it mustn't be yours. But someone could have taken one of the...
That's another problem.
There's so many loopholes.
There's a lot of problems with this. I agree.
It doesn't touch on everything.
Right, it doesn't touch on everything, and they can't. It's difficult to touch on everything. Because, first of all, it's all based on human behavior. Are people... Yeah, like the whole sugya about Knanim and Yudim, and, you know, can we assume that Jews also take things that they find on the street? And, you know, will they try to return it? It's complicated. You can't really get into it. You can't answer everything. Okay, by Rabbi Yirmiya. Okay, Rabbi Yirmiya, again, he's the guy who asks all the questions, right? Kishir mahu. What if it's in the shape of a bracelet? Okay, meaning, the coins are all arranged in a circle. Okay? Kishura mahu. What if they're all in a line? Okay, here's our show and tell. Kichatsuva mahu. What if they're in a triangle shape? Okay, this I can't do with my five coins, but... Okay, you can imagine, right? Triangle shape. Ma kisulam mahu. What if, okay, what's a sulam? Okay, it's not exactly like a sulam, but it's one on top of the other. Okay, so that they're all leaning on the other. It's a row, not a row that's individual, but they're all one on top of the other. So now, generally, we don't get answers to Rav Yirmiyahu's questions. We get at least one here. Pashat mehachada, we can answer one of them. De Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Ravua, kol she'ilu machnis lakisam b'nehem v'notlam bevat achat chayav lachris. If you can put a toothpick under and lift them all at once, which one can you do it with? With the sulam, because they're all attached to each other like a domino effect. Okay? If that's the case, then you're chayav lachris. Then we call that a formation. Okay? So the sulam, definitely. The rest we don't know. By Rav Ashi. Kavnei beit kulis mau. Okay, kulis was a Greek god. Okay, we assume it's Mercury. Okay, it comes from Marculus. Sometimes we see it as Marculus, which is Mercury. Okay, so if it's in a formation of Kavnei beit kulis, which we'll see soon what that is, What do we say? Tashma, Ditanya, let's learn from here. It says in the Braita, this is actually strange. Usually it says Tashma and it just quotes the source. It doesn't say the word Ditanya. Like Tashma is an intro word and Ditanya is an intro word. Here somehow we ended up with both. I don't know why. Matzama o mepusarot hare elu shelo. Havnei bekulis chayav lachriz. If they're formed like the stones in the mikdash of bekulis, then you have to be machriz. Ve'elohen avnei bekulis. Okay, so now we have our answer. Yes, you have to lachriz. And what are they? Echat mikam ve'echat mikam ve'echat agabem. Okay, you would call this like a gesher, right? Like a bridge. You have one next to the other, and then the other one is on top of both. Okay, that would be chayav lachriz. It's kind of similar to a migdal in a sense. Tana Rabbanan, Hamotzei Sela Bashuk, Umitzao Chaveiro, Va'amar Lo Shelihi. Okay, so you find a coin in the shuk, and the friend says, hey, that's mine. Chadashahi, and he says it was a new coin, or Nironiti. He says it was from the king of the Niron Kesar, it said on it. Shalmelech Ploni, it was this particular king. Lo Amar Klum. Okay, he doesn't get to take it back. Right, because it's just a coin. Veloed ela afilu shmo katuv aleha, even if his name was written on it. Okay, how exactly his name was written on it? But I think they mean it had a very identifiable feature. Like, let's say you took a bill and you signed your name on it. Okay, why is that not good? Because lefisha ein siman lematbea damar dilma apuke afke umiina shachrina nafel. This was like with the wine we saw the other day, right? That what? Just because your seal was on the wine, right? Once it goes to the shuk, people. You sell it to other people, and then other people have your seal on it. Same thing with money. Money, we always say, lahotza'a nitna, right? You're spending your money. So therefore, just because it has your name on it, doesn't mean you didn't pay it for some other thing, and now it belongs to somebody else. True. Yeah, exactly. Right. That makes a lot of sense. That one's easy. Okay. Now we're going to see. Okay, so we talked about Hare Elush Shalo and Chayav Lachriz. Now we're going to see a case of Hareza lo yiga. You're not allowed to touch it. Okay? This happens. You find something on the street, right? Now, let's say the assumption here is it doesn't have a siman on it. If it has a siman, then you have to take it and be machriz. But if it doesn't have a siman, once you take it, what's going to happen? The guy is never going to be able to get it back because he has no siman by which to take it back from. So the assumption is, okay, we're going to talk about that there's different categories of places. You find something placed in an area. There's a place that's not mishtamer at all, like the middle of the street. So there the assumption is you can pick it up. It doesn't have any identifiable features. If it's in a very safe place where no one else is going to get to it, you know, it's unlikely some person's going to pick it up, then it's clear the guy left it there on purpose and he's coming back for it, and therefore you have no rights to even touch this item. This item, forget that, it's not called an aveda. In other words, something has to qualify as a lost item for you to be able to you know, for these laws to apply. If somebody left something in a particular place, hidden behind something, in some whatever, where no one else is going to see it, that's his. That's not an aveda. So what if it's at this in-between spot where it's kind of out of the way, but it's not exactly protected. So what could happen? Right? This happens, by the way, very often. You see something on the street, and it's kind of on the side, and you think, did somebody leave it there? And if they did, well, might someone else pick it up and take it? And maybe I should take it, because if I don't take it, it won't be there for the guy when he comes back for it. On the other hand, if I do take it, and the guy comes back to look for it, maybe he won't find it, and he won't find me, and... Okay, so now, in this case, if there's no siman, then the guy won't be able to get it back from you. Basically, it'll become yours. So you're basically stealing it from him almost, right? So you have to figure out, is this an aveda that I need to return or not? So, matza achar hagapa, o achar hagader. If you find it behind a gapa, I think, right, right, Rashi says it's a stimat kotel shel etz or shel kanim. It's some sort of, how would you explain that? Like a what?
Fence or behind
the wall. Right, a wall. It's some sort of wall, okay? You find it behind the wall or the gader, the fence, okay? You find it behind the wall, behind the fence. You find gozalot mekusharim. You find like little chicks that are tied up. O b'shvilin shebesadot, or you find them on a shvil, like in the path by the fields. Hare ze lo yiga behem. you're not allowed to touch them. Because the assumption is that it's not clear, did the person leave them here on purpose or not? Since it's a safek, okay, if you pick it up, for sure you're causing the guy to lose out. Because then he has no way to get it back from you because there's no siman. Okay? And therefore, lo yigabahem. Matzah kli ba'ashpa. Again, we saw this already before. If you find a kli in the garbage, im mechuseh lo yigabo. If the kli was covered, then you can't touch it. Im miguleh, if it was revealed, then no telu machriz. So again, the assumption is mechuseh, he left it there and he's planning to come back for it. Okay? And even if you're not exactly sure, because it's in the ashpa, you don't really know what he meant, still, if you take it, there's no way he'll get it back. And therefore, adif not to take it. But if it was, you know, migule, the assumption is it got there by accident, and therefore, no telu machriz. You have to return it. Ah, yafeh. So then it's going to be a problem. How are you going to be machriz? Exactly. It's a bit of a problem here. How does that work? Okay, so now, my taima, damrinan. So what's the logic of this Mishnah? I already explained this. Hani inish atzin inhu, right? They might have hidden these things. V'ishakilahu, leiluhu lamarayu simna begavayu. If I take it, then he's got no siman. Hilkach l'shavkinu ad'ate marayu v'shakilahu, right? So therefore, leave it there until the owner comes back and takes it himself. So now they say, wait, what was the case on the Mishnah? You left these gozalot makusharim, these tied up chicks. So am I. La have a kesher simana. Didn't we talk about that tying things could be a siman? So shouldn't you say that? Amrabi Abba Brasavda, Amarav, Bimikusharim become fehen. We're talking about that their wings were tied up. That's a typical tie that everybody does so that their chicks don't fly away. So then siman. So then if he left these tied up chicks in a particular place behind this wall, don't you think you could say, well, I left chicks behind the wall and the makom itself should be a siman? And the whole thing was that there wasn't a siman. Amar Rav Ukva Barchama Bimadadin. It's where they, even though their wings are tied up, they can kind of use their feet to move. So therefore, the fact that you find them there doesn't necessarily mean that they were there, they were put there in the first place. Then Ibn Madadim me'alma atu umutarim. If they can move around, well then that's like, we talked about this with birds and stuff, that if they fly around, the fact that they're in someone's property doesn't mean they belong to them. And therefore, bichlal, you should, if the whole thing is they can move around, well then how do we know they even got here in the first place? Of course you should be able to take them. The whole thing was that they were in this particular spot. So it doesn't make any sense to say that they can move around, because then this particular spot doesn't mean anything. So now where they answer, it's exactly the safek. Ika lememar me'alma atu, v'ika lememar inishatzni inu, v'havele safek kinyuach. Okay, so before we get to the end, I'll just explain. You could say that they got here on their own. You could say that somebody put them there. We don't really know. Okay? And it's safek kinyuach. It's a safek whether someone actually placed them here or not. V'amar bi'abra brasav damarav, ko safek kinyuach lechatchila lo yitol, v'im natal lo yachzir. Okay, what does this mean? So any safek kinyuach, if you're not sure if someone left it there, therefore, milechatchila, you can't take it. But if you took it, okay, lo yachzir. Okay, this is a little tricky what this lo yachzir is. Okay? Basically, once you take it, according to this, so Rashi says, deha leka de yav simana. There's no one who's going to give a simana anymore. So if you actually took it, and no one, right, it's yours, basically. So lechatchila, you're not allowed to take it. But since this is safek, if you already took it, and since there's no siman, therefore, you can already keep it. Okay? Matzah kli ba'ashpa. Mechuseh lo yigabo migule notel v'nachriz. Now we're going to get into this kli ba'ashpa. Ureminhu. Matzah kli tamun ba'ashpa. What did we say already in our Mishnah? If it's tamun, which is like mechuseh, right? What did we say? Lo yigabo. You can't touch it. What does it say in this braita? No telu machriz. If you find it hidden, right, then you have to announce it. Shekein derech ashpa lefanot. What does the braita say? Because an ashpa generally gets dumped out. And if somebody left something hidden there, well, they obviously want it back, and your garbage is going to get dumped, and therefore you should return it to them. Amar of Zavid. So we have a contradiction here, right? What does he say? Lo kasha. Habe kuve bekase. Habe sakini vahamenik. Okay? It's a difference between cups and bottles, like jars and bottles, and knives and forks. Okay, this is one of my favorite sources of Rabbeinu Chananel. Even though we don't have a lot of time, I want to just read it anyway because I love it. Rabbeinu Chananel on the side, he says, What's this hamenik? Kli sheyesh bo shnei rashim, kigon hamazleg, sheyesh lo shlosha shinayim. Okay, it's like a two-pronged fork, he says. Okay, and now he explains to you, in case you didn't know what a fork was. Okay, v'derech b'nei yavan, okay, this is what the Greeks would do. Lachzik chatichat habasar v'lachtochi masakin u'lechol. Okay, they would use this two-pronged thing to hold their meat in place. V'notel zeshachatach, and then he would pick up the piece. V'notel l'toch piv. V'ein yadav no'ago b'basar, and his fingers wouldn't touch the meat. Klal mipnei azuama. Here's that word again. Because they were worried it was contaminated. They want to touch their fingers to the meat. So they used this fork, right? He describes it as if from some, you know, out of this world experience.
Have no problem eating it.
Okay. Anyway, it's just a good source. So I'll always remember that when I first learned it. Okay. So, habukuve bekase. So in big things, the assumption is that the guy put it there on purpose. But sakini, and therefore you can leave it. You're not allowed to touch it. But sakini v'hamenik, which are these small utensils, it's very possible when they were sweeping the floor, it got caught up in there, right? How many times, how many people are missing silverware in their house, right? And it didn't mean to get there, and therefore you should take it. And no tel machris. So I didn't read it inside. Bekube bakase lo yiga. Besakini v'hamenik, no tel machris. Rapapa amar, different answer. Hava habakube bakase. Everything is talking about these bigger things. Below kashya, kam ba'ashpah ha'asuya lefanot, v'kam ba'ashpah she'en ha'asuya lefanot, right? This is what we said yesterday or 2 days ago, right? That there's an ashpah that generally people dump, and therefore you have to announce it because otherwise it's going to get dumped. But hareza lo yiga in an ashpah that wasn't asuya lefanot. So again, they say, like we said the other day, ashpah asuya lefanot, avidamidati. If you put it in the ashpah that's going to be dumped tomorrow, you know, today, tomorrow, then obviously he wasn't planning on ever getting it back, and why would you have to be returning it? So what do they say? No, ela ba'ashpa she'ena asuya lefanot, v'nimlach ala lefanota. It's an ashpa that you have to, right, you weren't planning to dump, and then you ended up deciding to dump it. Then you have to go announce to this guy, oh, by the way, your glass is in my dumpster, you know, you might want to take it out. Bishlam ala rab papa. Now, let's go back to the braita. Okay, this is all to explain this braita that said, matzakli tamum ba'ashpa notel umachwiz, she'kein derech ashpa lefanot. So now they're going to say, wait a minute, right? No telu machriz, because the derech of an ashpah is lefanot. So bishlama la Rav Papa. It makes a lot of sense to Rav Papa, who said it's all about whether you were going to dump the ashpah or not. Hainu dekatani, that's why it says shekein derech ashpah lefanot. Because it means, you know, it does get dumped, and therefore there's a case where you weren't going to dump it, but now you are, and that's why you have to announce. Ela la Rav Zvid, this lashon has nothing to do with anything. Mai shekein derech ashpah lefanot. Right? In other words, his difference was, what kind of kli was in there? Was it a kli that you put up there on purpose, or was it a kli that got there by accident? And if it got there by accident, well, then you have to be notel machriz. So what do they answer? He reads it differently. Shekein derech ashpa lefanot la kelim ktanim. Lefanot doesn't mean you dump the dumpster. The lefanot means sometimes you accidentally put little things in the garbage by accident. No, that's what it means. Derech ashpa, sometimes you're mifaneh things from your house by accident into the garbage. And that's why you have to be notel machriz, the things that we assume got there by accident, and not the things that we assume you put there on purpose. Okay, you have to remember, again, this whole concept of dumpsters, right? They put their stuff out of their house and they left it there for a while. Like, imagine a modern garbage dump, you know, that people had these garbage dumps that were outside their house that they just left there for a long time. We saw it in the past, too, with the streets, yes, with the streets, and maybe it was in Ta'anit with the rain and in the rainy season and with the garbage. We had a whole discussion about the garbages. I'm not sure if it came up in Ta'anit or somewhere. It was all about the garbages and the with the rainy season, and I forget all the details about it. Trying to remember the whole context. Anyway, okay, so that's it for today. Okay, so we're going to, if people, I don't know, we might learn Saturday night. We should decide if we're going to do the Shabbat daf or Sundays. Maybe we'll do Sundays. People have time on Shabbat to do the daf, and then by Saturday night we can learn Sunday's daf. Does that work? Because Sunday there won't be shir. So let's...
Tomorrow night?
Yeah, tomorrow night.
Did you get the WhatsApp?
Yeah.
You didn't see.
No,
it's fine. So the idea is to basically tomorrow night have a shiur on Hoshana Rabbah night. We'll do the Hoshana Rabbah daf. Okay, we'll do Sunday's daf because Hoshana Rabbah morning I won't be able to teach, And then we won't have Shira on Simchat Torah. We'll be back to normal on Tuesday,
which is Isru Chag.
Which is Isru Chag. We'll be here at 7:45.